Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now, let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast. Now, before we get started, I wanted to take a minute to ask a quick favor from the listeners. The point of the podcast is to help veterans through sharing stories like the one we're about to hear, but it doesn't really help if no one hears a story. So if you wouldn't mind, hit pause for a second and head on over to driveonpodcast.com/subscribe, where you can find links to subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast app. And if you wouldn't mind taking a second to share the podcast on social media or even directly to a friend who you think might benefit by listening to the podcast, I'd really appreciate it. Okay, so now back to the show. So today my guest is Natalie Sanders. Now, Natalie is an Army veteran, a mother, and a wife to a soldier. She's here to talk about her experience on deployment to Afghanistan and how it compares to being a stay-at-home parent with a newborn at a new duty station while her husband was deployed. This is a rather interesting topic to me personally, because my wife and I probably share somewhat similar experiences in that I was deployed just a few weeks after our first son was born. So it'll be interesting to hear another mother's perspective on deployment with a newborn. So without any further delay, Natalie, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, my name is Natalie, and I am from Irving, Texas, which is a large suburb of Dallas, and I served in the Army for 8 years, and I've been out now for a little over 5 years, and I'm still in the military community because my husband he's active duty, and we have two boys, and so right now I am a stay-at-home mom.
Okay. Great. Yeah. And that's no small job to have either, being a stay-at-home mom. So you mentioned to me earlier through emails back and forth that you wanted to share some of your experience on your deployment to Afghanistan. So why don't we start there?
Okay. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2010, and my husband had actually just come back from his deployment to Iraq, so they were kind of back-to-back, which was a challenge. Sure. And I deployed as a nurse with the 31st Cache, and we were in several different locations, and I ended up spending the majority of my time at Camp Dwyer, which is a Marine camp, and we provided, we had a tent hospital where we provided care to mostly Marines, some civilian contractors, we had translators, and it ended up as kind of a humanitarian mission as well, because we helped a lot of the locals that would come in after IED blast or and all sorts of things. They were brought into where we were for treatment.
Okay. Yeah. So that experience, I actually was in Afghanistan in 2010 as well, which is just coincidence that we happen to be deployed to the same country at around the same time. But that experience, with helping the civilians and helping, obviously the military and the civilian contractors and all that kind of stuff. I can't imagine it was an easy experience to handle any of that kind of stuff. But it probably helped, I would imagine, to some extent, help you as a parent later on, in life in terms of, dealing with the stresses of being a parent, especially, in the circumstances that you were kind of going through at the time. So now, how does that experience, those experiences that you had in Afghanistan, compare to being a stay-at-home mom with a newborn a child. And I imagine it could be drastically different in some respects, but sometimes raising a child can feel like you're in a war zone almost, you know? So like, how did those two experiences kind of compare for you?
It may sound strange, but I actually think that being a stay-at-home parent was harder than deployment because when you're in the Army and you're told everything that you have to do, right? But then when you become a parent, you don't have a handbook. I mean, you can buy and read books, but it's not the same as actually experiencing it. So I actually felt like my time in the military, even on deployment, was easier than being a stay-at-home parent. And especially coupled with the fact that my husband was only there for maybe the first month before he left. Can be very isolating having a newborn at home. And not only that, but then, you know, not having the support of your partner there with you. And also knowing that he's missing out on some milestones, just things like that, organizing your new schedule around vaccines, doctor's appointments, things like that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that, you know, to a person who's never had a child before that you just don't think about, like things like the vaccines and the doctor's appointments and the, you know, basic stuff like how to change a diaper. Like prior to having a kid, I never changed a diaper before. And it was, you know, that was eye-opening, you know, for me as well. You know, but what were some of the things that you did to kind of, did you have any sort of support network? Like were there, not necessarily a support network per se, but a, you know, a group of people maybe that you could, see on a regular basis? Like were there little, I know a lot of times there were like little classes at libraries and things like that, or rec centers and stuff like that, where you can take your kid to and you know, whether it's they're playing music or, you know, whatever, you can go there, and it's a social experience for the child, but it also kind of serves as a social experience for the parents as well. Were there any things like that that were around where you were, or anything like that?
Yes. So we were at Fort Drum at the time, and there were several events that you could go to. They had a story time at the library that was on post, and we would go to different paint classes. There were definitely opportunities to be out and about so that you wouldn't just have to stay home and you could be with other moms. There was a group that met at our community center once a month, and so we would try to make it a point to go to that.
Okay. Yeah, and I would imagine, and I don't know this for sure, but I would imagine that most military bases around would probably have something similar to that, where they have some sort of groups for parents to go with their kids and things like that. You know, and probably for a good reason, you know, with you know, spouses being deployed all the time, you know, it's kind of hard to just have them sitting there, having a parent sitting there and not really having any, you know, community or activities going on for them. So I would imagine that that's probably something that other parents could probably look for if they're in a similar situation, feeling isolated, where they can kind of look for that type of thing.
Yes.
Now, from my own personal experience, it was much different speaking to my wife while I was deployed. In episode 9 of this show, if anyone is interested in hearing that side of the story, you can go back to episode 9. I interviewed my wife, and we discussed a bit about our relationship. And so I'm not going to go too much into that there. But what was your relationship like with your husband while he was deployed? While you had that newborn at home, what was that kind of like in terms of communication and other things like that?
We just tried to do video chat as much as we could so that he could talk to our baby. And it was always challenging having that time difference because he was ahead of us in time. And so we would have to kind of schedule it around whatever his work schedule was. And sometimes I'd end up staying up late so that I could talk to him. or whatever the case was. So we tried to communicate as best as we could, and thankfully the video chat would usually work on both ends. Sometimes it would be grainy, but when we could make the connections, sure. We would.
All right. Yeah, I know when I was, before I was deployed, I should say, I had no idea where we were going to be in the country, what technology we'd have available to us or anything like that. And I know I sat down and one afternoon and I recorded myself reading a few children's books, like bedtime story kind of things. And I just had a video camera recorded it. And then my wife was able to play those for our son while I was gone, because we didn't know if I'd even have access to any kind of video chat or anything like that. And where we were, video chatting was kind of remote, to some extent, and we didn't really have too many computers there that were capable of the video chat too easily. So it was kind of a good thing that I did something like that. Mm-hmm. But one thing that we ended up doing actually was so my cell phone at the time, this was back in 2010, I had a BlackBerry cell phone, which makes me kind of feel old at this point saying that I had that. But on the BlackBerries, there was a BlackBerry Messenger, which was free to text back and forth between two BlackBerries. So my wife and I both had it. And even though I was halfway across the world, we still were able to text each other for free through that. And it just made the communication a little bit more on demand, you know, where we were able to, you know, it wasn't quite as good as a phone call or a video chat or whatever, but we still were able to kind of just, you know, send quick little messages to each other. Mm-hmm. And I know that helped us all, tremendously, being able to just send little quick notes, just, you know, checking in, just want to let you know I'm doing okay. And that kind of thing. And that was helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, so interesting to hear how your, you know, kind of relationship was too.
Yeah. One of the things that actually made me decide that I wanted to, get out of the military whenever we decided that we wanted to have kids was the fact that when I was deployed and I would be in the tent with the other women that were in my tent and they would be trying to video chat with their kids or talk to them and they would lose the connection. And at that point I just decided, right, I don't want to do that. It was so hard on them emotionally. Sure. So I just decided, you know what? My military career is going to end when we have a family and, right, you know, my husband can stay in if he wants to, but I know that that's not what I want for our future.
Yeah. And I think that's probably important for you to have seen firsthand, how the other, women in your tent there were affected by being deployed and being away from their children for such long periods of time. And then being able to make that decision with that kind of evidence there kind of supporting your decision. You know, probably a lot easier to make that decision than it would be if you hadn't seen that, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And so what other types of things did you guys do? So I know you said, video chatting. Was there any way for you guys to kind of like help each other out with things? I know, like, being a new parent, like you said before, you're kind of figuring things out as you go. There's no handbook that you get to kind of figure out what to do with kids. And typically when you have a spouse at home, you can help each other out to try to figure out how to navigate being a new parent. Were you able to kind of rely on that type of communication while your husband was deployed, or was that something that you just sort of had to figure out on your own?
I pretty much just had to figure out everything about being a new parent on my own. I just did. I had a Facebook group that I was in with all of our babies were due in March. And so we would ask each other a lot of questions. So I had that kind of social network online that we all had babies the same age. So we would keep in communication. And then my mom was able to visit and come help me So that helped a lot because it gave me a little bit of time away, some time to rest, and that way it wasn't just me completely on my own.
Sure.
Taking care of the baby.
Yeah. And I know, and again, I'm relating this to my own experience, my own family's experience, I should say. I know my wife would spend a lot of time at her parents' house. Sometimes she'd even stay at her parents' house while I was deployed. And for her, it was good to have another set of hands that could help with the baby, so she could catch up on some sleep, because as any new parent knows, you don't really sleep a lot when the baby comes.
It's definitely not.
It's just, that's a universal thing. I think you just have to accept you're not going to sleep. I actually probably got more sleep on deployment than I did when I was home with the baby.
Yes.
And she also was there, to just, my wife was also at her parents' house, I should say, to have another adult to talk to, so it's not just her and this little baby who can't communicate other than crying and things like that. So she was able to have somebody to talk to. And I think that was important for her own kind of sanity, to have that available. But it looks like you had something similar in terms of having your mother, help out, and also through the groups that you were in, that, you were able to ask questions to other parents about, basically being a parent and what to do in certain circumstances and things like that.
Yes.
So in terms of your, let's circle back a little bit to your deployment, because I think we touched on it a little bit, but I feel like, there might maybe be a little bit more to that might be, interesting in terms of, what your job was there and what you might have done over there. So if you don't mind, circling back to that a little bit, what other, so you helped, obviously the military, with their injuries, local, civilians who might have been injured in IEDs and things like that, and civilian contractors. What was that experience like for you in terms of, had you ever been in a real world, quote unquote, more real world experience where there was those traumas? I know you can do all sorts of training, to kind of learn about all of that stuff. But what was that your kind of first experience of actually seeing the blood and gore, if you will, from actual real life experiences, or do you have other, experiences from that prior to your deployment?
I really hadn't been too exposed to the things that we saw over there. I don't really think that there's anything that can prepare you for that. I had worked in the hospital at my first duty station, which it was kind of a short, it was less than a year that I was there, and I worked with heart patients. And then as soon as I got to my next duty station, which was Fort Bliss, then we basically started preparing to deploy, but we were mostly concerned with preparing our equipment, setting up tents, making sure we had all the medical supplies, things like that, not really doing a lot of practice, which I don't think you can really practice. They try to give you patients with the fake injuries so that you can treat them and kind of see how the hospital operates in that type of environment, but it's not at all like what it is like when you're actually there. Right. And I also had the opportunity to work with our British comrades also in Afghanistan, and I worked in the operating room with them. So when I did that, we would see people basically straight from the battlefield come in, get fixed up as best as those surgeons could do, and then they would transfer them out to where they could get a higher level of care. Okay. So, that was definitely something different. We'd see amputations, pretty severe injuries, and then some run-of-the-mill things too, like appendectomy. You know, some soldier has appendicitis, they just fix that and so they can feel better. Sure. But yeah, we definitely, we saw things that, you know, you would probably not see even in a regular trauma unit in the United States.
Right, right. Yeah, and especially not in the, maybe the volume or the concentration of time, you know, that you were there. So if you're, you might be seeing this, you know, on a much more frequent basis than you would anywhere else.
Right. And so, we didn't have a lot of days off, you know, it was just kind of right. Like you'd pretty much work and you'd get a shift off if they could, and, but you'd still be on call. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you, so I know a lot of times when people are kind of thrown into a situation like that, they don't really know what to do, or you know, when they don't know what to expect from that type of situation, seeing all of the that bad stuff that you kind of saw, they may not know how to cope with that either. What were mm-hmm. some of the ways that you found that worked for you in terms of coping to kind of get through the next day, you know, to come back and do it all over again, you know, after seeing that day after day? What were some of the things that you might have done to help you kind of cope and get through all of that?
We had an NWR tent, you know, where you could go get cooled off, have a snack, you could watch a movie. I remember watching all of the Big Bang Theory episodes on our time off, you know, communicating with family at home whenever you could get through to make a phone call. And really, I think we had a pretty good support system just with the rest of the people that I worked with. The soldiers were really great. We had an awesome chaplain that was always there for us. You know, he would, you could walk into where he stayed anytime and talk to him about what was going on.
Well, that's good. I know a lot of people who go to war and they experience some of these traumas, whether they're on the battlefield and experiencing them kind of as they're happening, or even as a medical professional who witnesses them, you know, a short time after they first happened, it's still a very traumatic experience to kind of observe that, and even. You know, trauma surgeons in the United States who, you know, I've spoken to before, not on this podcast necessarily, but just to people who have worked in hospitals and dealt with nasty car crashes or you know, gunshots and other things like that, where, you know, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around, you know, like this is a person's life, and you know. Their life is now in my hands, and I, like how do I justify, like, am I the right person to even be the person here to do all of this kind of stuff? Like, to some of those people, it's very hard to mm-hmm. To do that type of stuff. But it's good I think that there were those releases there in terms of, you know, like the MWR mm-hmm. tent and other soldiers nearby and the chaplain to speak to, you know, and I think it's important that, that people recognize that those opportunities are there for them. So should they feel like they are overwhelmed with that type of stress, you know, that they can rely on that type of stuff, to kind of help them out. And talking to people too. I mean, you know, maybe the other soldiers aren't the right people to talk to, but I'm sure the chaplain is a good place to start. And if the chaplain is not qualified to, you know, handle whatever it is that you need to talk about, I'm sure there's other steps that can be taken to kind of escalate that if need be.
Yes. And a lot of times we didn't get closure as far as we would have our patient and then we would transfer them out. You know, sometimes I would actually go on the ambulance with them from the hospital to the airplane and they'd go with the Air Force nurses. And so we didn't know what happened to them, which can be hard.
Right. Yeah. That could be, not really knowing, like after they take off and they go, you know, either they make it to Germany or the United States mm-hmm. or wherever they end up. Not knowing what happened to that person is kind of hard too. And I know just from, you know, just the work that I do, you know, on a normal basis, like I like to see things through to completion. You know, I want to be able to finish a job. And if I can't finish a job, I at least want to know, how it turned out in the end. And what's going on with all that. So that probably is a little bit difficult as well. Now you said you have two boys now. So the first child was born while your husband was deployed, and the second child, was he born after was there any other deployments? I guess I'm trying to say, were there any other deployments going on that that child was involved in, or was it just the one?
Just the one. Our first child was when my husband, he deployed about a month after he was born. And then our second one, they're a little bit over 2 years apart. So he was home for that one. And the only thing that he's had is just, he does TDY, you know, pretty frequently, but it's, okay. It's not as hard. And sure. It is good that he got to kind of see what it was like since he missed out on a lot of the, even though it's a different kid, but he didn't have to miss everything like he did with the first one.
Yeah. So that's like almost an identical experience to what we had, because our first two kids are about 2 years apart, 2.5 years or so apart. And so, gosh, that's actually very interesting, especially with the timeline, because it just kind of seems to fit pretty close there. But I know, like when I first got back from Afghanistan, my wife just continued being mom. You know, doing all the mom things. She didn't just say, "Okay, he's home, he can handle the kid now," and just kind of walk away and, you know, kind of wash her hands of it, because she had dealt with this for the better part of a year, and you know, she just needed a break or whatever. So she continued being mom. And along the way, she kind of slowly was like teaching me the things that she learned over that year, which to me was extremely helpful, especially under the circumstances of, you know, when I came back home, my brother was killed in Afghanistan at the same time that I was there. And so I was going through quite a bit of, quite a bit of issues with that. And so, you know, learning to be a dad on top of all of that was extremely difficult for me. But so my wife was able to kind of help me out with, you know, slowly getting me back into being a dad. And then by the time our second child was born, I was ready to kind of jump in from day one, of when she was born, you know, just be dad and just be there and be present with her and everything like that. So, what was your experience like when your husband came back from deployment with your first child, in terms of getting him kind of involved in being dad, you know, again, with all of that?
I'm sorry to hear about your brother, by the way. So when my husband came back, I think he probably didn't really know what to expect, and it was kind of like you said, trying to kind of teach him how to do things, because it's like, you, as a mom and as a temporary single mom, you do everything your way. And so then when he would help, it's hard to say, "Oh, you're not doing it right." You know, cause we tend to be maybe a little bit control freaks about our kids and picking out their clothes, changing diapers, you know, simple things, but it's like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. So just kind of gradually adjusting to that was letting him do more and actually feeling comfortable leaving the house with him by himself, you know, even though you're the dad, it's like, okay, can you handle this?
Right. Exactly. So. Yeah. And I think my wife had a very, very similar experience where, you know, she has her routines and she does things a certain way and she does them well that certain way. But if one little thing kind of, comes in and disturbs that routine, it kind of throws off the whole process. And so I was that one little thing that would step in every now and again, thinking that I was being helpful, but I really was, in a way kind of throwing off the whole process. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's actually kind of refreshing to know that I was not the only one who was having to play catch up and learn how to be a dad, you know, that way. So, mm-hmm. It looks like we're actually kind of coming up on time on this episode, but I usually like to ask one final question before we wrap things up about any advice that you would have liked to receive before joining the military. But I'd like to kind of modify this a bit for you and this particular episode. So the final question that I'd like to ask is there any advice that you would give to a new mom who's going through a similar situation where her husband's deployed and she's at home, you know, perhaps by herself, with a newborn and maybe not necessarily a new mom. It could be a new dad, you know, where the mom is, you know, deploying a short time mm-hmm. after, you know, having a child or whatever, a new parent, let's just say,
okay.
You know, whose spouse is then being deployed. You know, is there any advice that you would give to them?
I would say just don't stay at home and just be isolated, even though it can be very difficult to get out of the house sometimes with all the things you have to bring, diapers, extra clothes, etc. There's a lot of programs. There's Army Community Service. Some posts, like here, we have a new parent support program. There are classes you can go to. Your chaplain, of your partner's unit. There are a lot of resources, and I would just say it's too easy to just stay home and be isolated, but don't do that because it's not good for your mental health. It's better to be around people that are going through the same thing if you can.
Absolutely. And I definitely think that's a great piece of advice. You know, definitely being around other people, especially during a difficult situation where you might be concerned about your spouse who's deployed, you know, for their safety, and then dealing with all the things trying to figure out how to be a parent, or even if you've had a child before, figuring out how to be a parent on your own is a difficult thing, and so having other people who are going through that as well around you can only help the situation, I think. So I think that was great advice that you have, you know, for all of that. So, Natalie, thank you very much for being on the show and sharing your information, you know, with us about your deployment, about being a stay-at-home mom with a deployed spouse. Really, really great information. I think it can definitely help other people who might be going through similar situation. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.